So what could this mean for Australia's involvement in Afghanistan? The head of the Strategic and Defence Study Centre at the Australian National University is Professor John Blaxland. He's a former Australian Army officer and an expert on military strategy in Afghanistan. He's also been watching the US President's address closely, and he joins us now in our Canberra studio. Professor Blaxland, welcome to The World Today.
Eleanor, thanks for having me on the program.
What's your overall assessment of the strategy that President Trump has just outlined?
I think what President Trump has done is tried to put his best foot forward in an awful situation. He's inherited a grab bag of strategies that have effectively failed over the last decade and a half. He's clearly moved away from nation building. He's backed away from the coin rhetoric of counterinsurgency. He's gone for a minimalist strategy that focuses on only developing capabilities within the Afghan security forces and bolstering the government, but not seeking to nation build. That's a big change. It's a significant back down, if you like. And it is something that stands in stark contrast to what President Obama did a few years back on military advice, which was to ramp up to 100,000 troops with a view to nation build. And that apparently strong commitment was then capped off by a declaration at the outset of when it would wind up. And that was something that sent a very, very clear signal to the Taliban that all they had to do was wait.
Yes, and President Trump made it clear he won't be operating on what he called time signals, but on condition signals.
Yeah, and I think what we're seeing here is probably a shift in the American mindset to viewing the commitment to Afghanistan more akin to the presence in Germany, Korea and Japan in the post-World War II period of nation building, while not actually running the country but playing a more constructive, more active role in calling the shots in the government, but also not doing the heavy lifting. So while it's the comparison is limited because all of those circumstances were where war had ceased and it was a peaceful situation that they were effectively governing in, this situation is far from that. But by normalising America's presence in Afghanistan, by declaring that, you know, that kind of 10 to 15,000 troop level is kind of sustainable, and it is for the US forces, they're sending a signal to the Taliban and to Al-Qaeda and Daesh and everybody else in the mix there that they can't wait them out. And I think that's significant. But, of course, there are some significant additional challenges here. And President Trump didn't quite address this, and this is about, firstly, I would call it PCP, poppies, corruption, and he did talk about the third one, Pakistan, but I think there's a dimension there that he missed. On the poppy front, you know, this is a fundamental problem in Afghanistan is the country is inherently dependent on the poppy crop, and there hasn't been an alternative crop developed, even though the West has been involved there for a decade and a half. This has become the major crop for the nation, and that is a fundamental problem for the nature of the Afghan state. That's linked to the issue of corruption. Corruption in the state is so profound and so widespread that people have now for a number of years just had to turn to the Taliban. They haven't had the option of good governance from the Afghan authorities, and this has been fundamentally undermining the resolve and the ability of the West to do very much about it.
And President Trump said that this policy of what he called principled realism is splitting apart the notion of constructing democracies in foreign lands from his goal of targeting terrorists. Is that a more realistic approach to defining victory?
Yeah, and I think it is. Essentially, you know, he's been dealt a pretty crappy sandwich, if you like. The options aren't good. There really aren't any good options. The option of simply walking away is, you know, as you rightly made clear in the speech, comparable to the situation in Iraq. The Americans pulled out of Iraq, and what happened then? It left the vacuum for, you know, an ungoverned space to be filled by effectively, you know, an even worse manifestation of jihadism. So there's a desire to avoid that. Clearly the third element is the third letter in that PCP is Pakistan, and he touched on it The problem there with Pakistan is that Pakistan isn't like Afghanistan. Pakistan is actually a nuclear-armed state. It's also a state that's quite concerned about its own inherent ability to hold itself together. It is a fractious state. It is one that manages to exist through a range of factors where it's actually playing off different power dynamics in the federally administered tribal areas in Balochistan and in the central area of Pakistan as well, dealing also with the perceived grave threat from India, which is the whole rationale for its nuclear weapons program. But the dimension that wasn't existent before, which is very much a factor now, is that China is a big player in Pakistan. So while in the past Pakistan was a country that was fairly beholden to the United States to a certain extent, that's less so today because they're much more in the position where China matters much more significantly than, relatively speaking, does the United States. So the question then is, will the threat of force, will the Trump rhetoric intimidate the Pakistanis? He's hoping. I'm not overly optimistic that it will, though.
Professor Blackson, let's now look at Australia's possible involvement. 2 months ago, the Australian Prime Minister responded to a US request for more resources by increasing the number of Australian troops in Afghanistan. Now, you warned then that there was no meaningful strategy behind that request. How confident are you that there is now one in place?
Look, we've been involved since 2001. There is a sense of moral obligation, which I recognise. So I'm not saying we should precipitously withdraw. And now that the United States is demonstrating resolve to stay beyond, a set period and to actually propose a long-term engagement with Afghanistan such that we might actually see the Taliban wound back, maybe, then I think it is incumbent on Australia to continue to play a role. I don't think we should walk away from Afghanistan. But Well, I just think we need to be very cautious about any pressure from the United States to do more in the region.
Do you expect that the Prime Minister will come under more pressure to increase Australia's commitment in Afghanistan and the region?
Yeah, I suspect that will be very much part of the pressure that will happen. It'll be happening across NATO as well. But, of course, NATO's circumstances are very different to ours. They don't live at the southern edge of East and Southeast Asia. And that's a space where Australia has essentially struggled. Arguably it's a bit facetious, but if Australians are barely monolingual, we're not very good at understanding regional neighbours, other cultures. Our immediate neighbourhood is getting more problematic, more tricky, more unstable. What we've seen this over the last few years in Indonesia, we've been helping Indonesia, engaging constructively with Indonesia. But then, of course, it's manifested again in a horrible way in Mindanao, in Marawi, where the fighting continues and where the problem of jihadism festers and appears to be metastasizing yet again. And this is where Australia needs to focus its efforts. And look, to be fair, Australia is doing a lot of good work in negotiating and engaging with Indonesia, with Malaysia, with the Philippines and other countries in the neighbourhood. But with the effort we've had to make to engage in the Middle East, it has seriously eroded our ability to invest creatively in this space. And I know that the seniors in the military in the Australian Defence Force understand that, but they understand that there's a competing pressure. My sense is, and this is something I've said occasionally to American senior officers when they visited, is look, stop asking us to go to the Middle East. You're better off leaving us to get engaged in our neighbourhood where we can really help leaven the neighbourhood, help bolster security, bolster stability. That's where Australia, it's our neighbourhood. There is, on one level, a natural inclination to want to go and work with the Americans and to say yes to the Americans. But on the other hand, I think in terms of what we can do that is useful not just to Australia but to the alliance and to the neighbourhood, it's for Australia to say, okay, look, we're going to stay doing what we're doing in Afghanistan. We recognise that we want to support the US efforts there and we don't want to see it turn into a festering sore worse than it already is. But we're not going to do more because we've got so much in our neighbourhood we need to engage and constructively. Just think about this for a minute, Eleanor. We've spent the last 16 years, our senior most diplomats and military commanders have invested emotional time and effort in learning Pashto and Arabic and in learning about the Middle East, and very few of them speak Bahasa, Tagalog, Tetum, Malay, Thai, Pidgin, anything in our neighbourhood.
So
we really need to focus on our patch.
So you're suggesting the PM should resist that pressure. Professor John Blaxland, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Eleanor.
That's Professor John Blaxland, the head of the Strategic and Defence Studies Centre at the Australian National University.